This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena. Step into the arena. If you work in business today, you know how important it is to produce results. And if you work in sales, then you absolutely know how important it is to produce results and faster. My guest today is Andy Paul. He's written a book called Zero Time Selling. It's a little book. It's probably about 150, 160 pages long, and it's got 10 critical insights that I think of as lean thinking for sales organizations. Andy's a really smart guy. He's a good friend, and he's part of my tribe. So let's talk to Andy. Hey, Andy, how are you?
Great. Anthony, how you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for joining me here. So I imagine that a lot of people listening to this aren't going to be familiar with you and your work, except through maybe my Twitter stream. So if I could get you to, can you take just 1 minute and introduce yourself? Who are you, and how did you get to this point?
Okay. Well, my name's Andy Paul. We'll start there. And yeah, I've had my own consulting business for about 12 years. Prior to that, spent about 25, 30 years in technology sales, primarily working with a series. I started with Apple in the early days and then got involved with startups. I think I worked for 7 or 8 different venture-funded startups, both in the Valley and San Diego, before starting my consulting company in the year 2000. And what I really was starting with the charter I had when I started was, geez, how can I show other companies, because how to sell like we did when I was at these startups, which was we were the small kid on the block. We were underfunded, under-resourced, and we had to go out and compete against some of the world's largest companies to win business. And we won a lot of business. How did we do that? And I said, well, geez, that's lessons I can pass on to customers that are small to mid-sized businesses, primarily looking to penetrate new markets or even do better in the markets they're in. And that then led to writing the book, Zero Time Selling, 10 essential steps that every company can take to accelerate their sales, and which won an award as one of the best sales marketing books of 2011. And
it's a great book. It's a great book. And there's 10 points in here, and I recommend the book for anybody that's in sales. It'll make you rethink some things. And the book starts out kind of in a funny way. You have this character that you set up named Milt. And right. Milt sort of is our guide through the book, and he's sort of an old school sales guy, sales manager right. That's got all these experiences. And you sort of dispel some myths using Milt as the straw man. But it starts off, Milt's really an acronym. And so let's maybe just we can riff on the first 3 points you have in the book, because sure. I think people will benefit from this conversation. And some of it's so hot right now. And, you know, personally, I'm going through this whole thing thinking about lean, and a lot of this idea sounds like it resonates with lean, and you can guide me right. through some of that. So let's start with sell with Milt. Tell me what Milt is and why it's so important for sales organizations and salespeople to think about this concept.
Right. So what the acronym stands for is you always want to be selling with maximum impact in the least time. And that can really, the least time is the least investment of time on the part of the customer, and also with the least investment of your time as well. So it really speaks to preparation, is that you want to make sure that every interaction you have with the customer is planned to achieve the maximum impact with the least investment of their time. Because time is sort of the fundamental common denominator between sellers and buyers, right? I look at selling primarily as an exchange of time. I mean, the customer gives you their time or invests their time in you. What are you giving them in return? And if you make good use of their time, then they're going to give you more time to go to the next step of their buying process. So the way to achieve that then, I believe, and to be most effective, is this acronym, sell with maximum impact in the least time.
How do you do that? And I work with sales organizations. I'm a salesperson. And I think maybe the conceit that we have is, you know, Andy, I've made 1,000 sales calls, you know, and I know how to prepare for a sales call, and I don't need to do any pre-work before that. And you're smirking. No one can see this on video except me. But you're smirking going, yeah, right. How do you prepare to create the maximum impact?
Well, it's really the key word is preparation, right? There are no there should be no casual sales calls, right? We see this all the time. You know, that I give the example when I speak in front of groups is that, let me give you an example. Hey, you know, Mr. Prospect, this is Andy. I'm just calling. I know it's been a couple weeks since we talked. I'm just checking in to see how things are going. Well, those type of sales calls happen all the time where someone thinks I need to reach out and touch someone in order to sort of see what the status is. Instead of thinking, when I take some of this customer's time, what value am I going to provide them that helps them get closer to making a decision?
I call it the sales call value proposition. There's no value for the client being created in a check-in call.
Then don't do it, right? That's my contention. If you don't have a plan and you can't actually provide some value to the prospect during the call, don't do it. Sometimes nothing is better than something. And so that's what Milt really talks about, is it's really a level of preparation beyond which people really think about. It's not just, geez, I understand who the players are in the company. I understand what their products and their services are. No, it's really thinking about what does the customer need at this point in time to move from one step of the buying process to the next. And I'm going to provide that with the maximum impact, you know, give them the best, most value I can with the least consumption of their time.
Yeah. And I think in my experience is if you've got some knowledge and you know where they are in the buying cycle, you can make some assumptions about what they're looking for. If they're at the early stages where they're just recognizing their needs, then you know that you've got to supply them with information. If they're evaluating options, you know that they're looking for how do I differentiate you and how am I going to make trade-offs and weigh these things. But sometimes you don't know. And I've always found, I think that if you just ask, you know, what do we need to do on this call to make it valuable for you? Here's what I hope the agenda would be. They embrace that and say, well, you know, I was hoping I'd be able to get this done.
Right.
And then you know what you need to do to create that value.
Yeah, I have a favorite question, which is, geez, what are the two or three things you want to learn about me or my product or services today in this call? And it's a simple question, but you know, people, you keep it finite, you know, because you ask for a specific number of things that they want to have answered. You also say, what do you want to learn about us? You want to say, what are the two things that you want to learn about us today? And then provide that information.
Great, great question. So, and this is sort of sets up the theme for the whole book, which is maximum impact, least amount of time, which I don't think salespeople think of naturally. I think we think that a lot of this is out of our control, and we're reading a lot of things now that say everybody's already deep into their buying cycle. You don't control it anymore. But I think you go against the grain here, and I think you're right. You do have some control over how you respond and how you set up the interactions. And so let's deal with two more of these.
Well, let me interject to say
sure.
Right. What the point I'm trying to make is the only thing you really have control over is what you do.
Right.
Right. But since you do have control over that, make the most of it. Right. Don't waste the customer's time. Don't waste your own time. Be very deliberate and very planned in how you progress, because you only have control over what you do.
Okay. Maybe in the last 3 months, I've been asked 4 or 5 times about what a sales ready lead looks like. And the question continues to pop up, and I continue to describe it as a unicorn. I think it's a mythological creature that doesn't really exist. Everybody's hopeful that, you know, maybe that when they pick up the phone and call, all they're going to do is email the contract over and a deal's going to be made. But I've always said that we take clients as we find them, like a golf ball. You play it wherever it lies. That's where you pick it up. That's what you've got to do. And you say something here that will make a lot of salespeople cringe and a lot of sales managers and sales leaders smile. But you say follow up 100% of all sales leads. Tell me about the logic behind following up on 100% of all sales leads.
Well, I talk about it in the book, and another thing that I do when I speak in front of live audiences is I equate a sales lead to a scratch-off lottery ticket. And yeah, I'll give somebody in the audience a lottery ticket that's unscratched, and I'll say, tell me how much this is worth. Well, they look at it, and they can't answer because they haven't scratched it off yet. Well, that's what a lead is, right? Until you engage with the lead, you know, engage in the process of scratching off the wax off the surface, you have no idea what its value is. And I like to use the statistic because, you know, it's $24 billion worth of scratch-off lottery tickets sold in the United States every year. And industry statistics are that anywhere from 40 to 80% of sales leads are never followed up. So if I was to equate that to the scratch-off lottery tickets, that's saying that, and I ask this question when I speak to audiences, does anybody think that there are $12 billion worth of unscratched lottery tickets sitting in people's sock drawers at home? And the answer is, of course not, right? People can't hardly wait to get out of the store before they're scratching off to see if there's something there.
I've watched many people scratch standing at the counter.
Right. And so if you're a salesperson and you're confronted with something, you don't know what the value of it is until you engage with it at some level. And the thing that drives me nuts is to have salespeople say, oh, that's a bad lead. I can tell just by looking at it. Well, it's, if I hand you a lottery ticket, can you tell me whether that's a winner or a loser? They're not all going to be winners, but you don't know until you engage. And I'd always made the practice in my lifetime, in my career, is if I called somebody that, yeah, I wasn't sure whether they'd be a good lead or not, but after I had spent a couple minutes with them, I'd ask them, do you know anybody else? Now that you know a little bit about my product or service, you know, you reached out to us. Maybe we're not a fit, but do you know somebody else this might be a fit for? And I can't begin to tell you how many times I've gotten new prospects and new leads just off that simple question.
And this is the culture from coming from a startup where you have to be scrappy. That call, you're going to make that call back and you're going to ask for a referral because, you know, this is how you're not going to eat if you don't. If you don't bring some revenue through the door in your startup, right?
Well, every time somebody reaches out and has an interest, a possible interest in what you're doing, is yeah, you got to make the most of it because you don't have unlimited marketing budget and you've got to make the most of what comes across. Well, that's the attitude every sales organization should have.
Why don't they, though? What happens to a sales organization where all of a sudden these leads don't look like they looked when you were in a startup? What changes?
Well, I think that part of what happened is that salespeople in general haven't evolved as quickly as the leads have. Now, if you look at leads when I got started selling back ages and ages ago, is, you know, the customers had sort of one source of information about my product and service, and that was me. And so if they had even the slightest curiosity, there was no online source of information, they had to reach out and sort of touch somebody. And a lot of times you got people who are just, you know, sort of looky-loos. Today, those people will come to your website and say, eh, that's not for me. They won't engage with you. But the people that are engaging, do you know anybody that willingly fills out a web lead form and submits it if they're not interested in the product? Because they don't want to be bothered, right? Because they don't want to open the door to being engaged. So customers now, you know, the statistics show, we talked about before, they're 50 to 75% of the way through their buying process before they engage with a seller for the first time. So when they do reach out and submit that lead on this inbound sales lead, you know, there's a higher probability this is someone that's a worthwhile someone to talk to. They may not ultimately be a fit for your product and service, but, you know, they've gone part of the way down the road. They know enough to say, yeah, I really need to talk to somebody. So unfortunately, I think what happens is that so many of those leads now are emanating from the marketing automation systems and from marketing, and there's still this inherent sales skepticism about marketing generated leads, which is crazy. You know, I think it's absolute nuts because the leads today are not the same leads that people had 20 years ago.
I'll give a little bit of the story away here. So read the chapter on follow up 100% of all your sales leads, and you'll discover that the math is, and this is what Andy's experience has shown, is that the math is you can get a dramatic increase in your sales.
Absolutely.
Just by following up on the leads that you already have that are sitting in a desk drawer somewhere or sitting in a CRM unresponded to. And I indict the salesperson and the sales organization for allowing that to happen. But there's some complacency behind this, right?
Absolutely. It's what I call managing by anecdote to a certain degree is if you ask a CEO, are you following up all your sales leads? They say, well, of course that's happening. What do you mean? Well, of course. Well, they just assume it's happening like breathing in and breathing out, right? If we breathe in, we're going to breathe out. If we get a lead, we're going to follow up. And it doesn't happen. And so my challenge with clients when I work with them is I say, look, I guarantee you I'll get you more revenue just through the leads that you currently are getting today that you're not following up. And as you said, the math is very compelling. If you're only following up 50% of your leads and you've got a 2% conversion rate, well, if you follow up 100% of your leads and you're still converting at 2%, what have you done? You know, you've increased your revenues.
Pretty good.
Pretty well. So the math is compelling, and it's the easiest place for any company to find immediate business.
I could keep you here all day and go through literally all 10 of these. They're all just as fun as these are for me personally. We could do everything now and CRM it, which I love, and disqualify the losers. But I want to go to number three, which is always sell with the sharp end of the stick. And I have seen this. I've maybe been guilty of it myself. And what your premise here is in this chapter is that you need to send the person with the greatest value creating knowledge to be customer facing and deal with that customer. But I see, especially in software companies and complex sales, we've got a rep with almost no real knowledge of the product. And then we're going to bring in a sales engineer or a team behind them to do some team selling. So the person that's really fronting the organization, I think they fall into your model C. You've got an account rep who a lead shows up, they follow up on it, and then they have to bring a value creator or try to get one involved late in the process. And your whole premise here is speed is of the essence. So when right. that customer needs value to be created, you've got to create value. So share a little bit more about selling with the sharp end of the stick.
Right. So we go back to the beginning premise of the book, which is that in a world where technology is changing so rapidly, and it's extremely difficult for any company to establish any sort of meaningful and enduring, lasting product differentiation, the way you're really going to differentiate yourself is by how you sell. It's not, as I like to say, it's not what you sell, it's how you sell that really is the way that you build trust, create credibility around your solution, and differentiate yourself from your competitors. So if you take that the next step and say, oh, geez, okay, you've got this pre-educated prospect that's reaching out to touch you. They already answered three quarters of the questions they have. Is when they do contact you and reach out to you, unfortunately, most companies go back and start selling at the beginning, right? We're going to start a sales process at the beginning, and the customers are already past that. What they want is they want information so they can make that next step in their buying process. Who's best qualified to do that, to help them get through the rest of their buying process with the least investment of their time? That's people with specific industry and product knowledge to help them. And there's always this tug where you have sales managers say, look, I need somebody who's salesy. You know, I need somebody who's a salesperson. And I said, well, customers, you know, relationships these days with your customers, I equate to my relationship with my golden retriever. And what customer I call it a needs and deeds based relationship is, you know, I walk my dog three times a day. I feed him twice a day. I play with him once a day. And I know that he loves me unconditionally as long as I'm doing those things. But when I go away on a business trip and the dog sitter comes in and walks him three times a day and feeds him twice a day and plays with, he loves her unconditionally. And so, you know, as salespeople, we're very easily replaced. What our clients want, you know, give me what I need, and we've got a relationship. Stop meeting my requirements, and we don't have a relationship anymore. So it's this fallacy that we need to have some guy that's, you know, looks good in a suit and, you know, is incredibly well spoken, when really what the customers want is something much more fundamental, and they respond to it incredibly. And I give an example in the book where one client selling a technical product is basically a inside sales thing. It's $35,000 to $60,000 a pop, reasonably technical sale. And he hired me to help him boost sales. One of the first things we did is replaced a couple of the salespeople who were just pure generalist and replaced them with people from the product side of the team. And one of the guys was pathologically shy, literally pathologically shy. He just knocked it out of the park year after year after that point, because the customers loved him because they called up and they said, look, we're interested in this. Does your product do this? And within half hour, they were sold because they got all the information they needed. And it took away a lot of the incentive to go talk to a competitor.
This is what's fundamentally changed about sales. And I think you capture it there with that anecdote, is that sales acumen is now business acumen. And the greater knowledge you have about how to create value, how to bring all of your insight, your ideas, your skills, your resources to bear on your client's challenges is where the real action is. So it's nice to have a smile on your face and shiny shoes, but what the client really needs is somebody to be part of their management team and to help them think about how to get business results. And the more you give them that person, the easier it is to say yes to your offering.
Well, yeah, and it was really interesting. There was somebody who I'm not sure I remember his exact name, but you know, I saw a blog posting several months ago about someone said, if you really want to fail in sales, make sure you hire a product specialist, you know, somebody with knowledge. And this person's contention was that, you know, the industries and products change so quickly that if you hire specialists, their knowledge is outdated. So you need to hire generalists. And I'm like, dude, you know, if you had that same contention, what you would say is that you know, you'd only want to go see a doctor who's 1 year out of medical school, because in 3 years, the industry changes, and if the doctors don't keep pace, well, of course they keep pace. That's part of what they do. And that's what technical people do as well. I mean, they keep pace with what's going on. You know, if I've got a heart...
They're into it.
Right. But if I've... And I blogged about this. I said, look, if you're sick, who do you want to see? If you've got a heart problem... I mean, I had an issue with some arrhythmias a couple of years ago. Did I go see my GP? No, I went and saw a cardiologist, right? I saw somebody that knew about my specific problem. And so who do you want to have deal with that problem, a generalist or a specialist?
You know, having had a piece of my brain cut off, the first question I asked the neurosurgeon when I sat down with him was, how many of these surgeries have you done?
Right.
And he said, thousands. I like the answer. It's a good answer.
Right. So and he knew specifically about your problem.
Yes.
Did he know about digestive problems? No. You'd go see, you know, a gastroenterologist about that. And that's so if you have, let's say, you know, you're selling this company that I was talking about before in the anecdote was selling this piece of test equipment for testing printed circuit boards. You know, if a customer had a question about printed circuit boards, of course you'd want an expert in that to be able to deal with them, to help them understand, you know, understand their problems, first of all, let alone what the solution is. And yeah, that one sort of set me off when I saw that blog about hire a generalist. I see it as sort of my mission to sort of transform how people think about who they should be hiring and who's the best fit for selling their product.
Well, and it's interesting because we'll go back to the premise to close this out, but it's maximum impact, least amount of time. How do you do that if the generalist has to bring in five other people and it takes eight conversations to get the prospect the answer that they need? You've ended up taking and stretching it. And if somebody comes in, and I think this is your point, if now I'm competing that way and you send in the real specialist who can sit down and deal with everything in the first conversation, I'm losing. I'm going to fall back. And I wrote this the other day. I think that you sell from in front. You need to be in front of your competition. You need to be in front of the opportunity. And as soon as you start to fall behind, it's very difficult to catch up nowadays.
It's very difficult to catch up. And the thing is, the customer, and I've written about this, what I call the economics of attention. So the customer is overwhelmed with information. They're overwhelmed with responsibilities at work. Is what they're doing is deciding how they're going to allocate pieces of their time, slices of their time, based on what they're going to get the best return on that time, investment of that time. And, you know, in the world where as you said, to your point, you've got to be ahead of it. Once you're ahead and you're providing the value they want, the customer is not going to allocate time to someone else that's just wasting their time in comparison to you. And that's really where you create some real value for the customers by creating a clear choice in their mind. I can deal with Anthony because he's providing me incredible value every time we get together. Or I could talk to, you know, John, and John, you know, takes two calls to get done what Anthony does in one. Who am I going to buy from?
Absolutely. And I think that's where the game has changed. Tell me this. Where do people find you, Andy?
Well, they find me at ZeroTimeSelling.com. My address is Andy@ZeroTimeSelling.com. Phone number 619-980-4002. Yeah, so basic contact. And I welcome them to follow me on LinkedIn, connect with me there, or follow me on my Twitter stream, which is ZeroTimeSelling, @ZeroTimeSelling. And a lot of good content for people, both in the blog and the Twitter stream that we think find valuable.
And worksheets. And worksheets for the book.
And worksheets for the book. They can I have two ebooks that they can download from my website. Zero Time Selling Quick Start Guide and Zero Time Selling Implementation Guide that help them walk through the process of implementing these types of steps in their own company.
Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
I told you that Andy was smart and he didn't let me down. It's a great interview. You should pick up his book, Zero Time Selling. It's by Andy Paul, and you can find him at ZeroTimeSelling.com. You can find me, Anthony Annarino, at thesalesblog.com. And you can find me next week back here in the arena.